Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City Chefs,
Chefs. Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present. What? Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of
come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Connecticut.
Hello, how you doing today? Hope I find you feeling healthy on this Thursday, September 23rd, 2021. This is Dave here with Nate. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
Good evening, Dave. We are getting towards the end of it. I think we have, what, 10 games, 12 games left in the season? Let's bring it home. Bring the baseball season into Bring the baseball season on home.
I mean, it's we're at the point where a lot of scoreboard watching. If you're, a team that's in the thick of it, or looking at setting your playoff rotations, making sure your lineups are good. One of my favorite things, I think we talked about it or touched on it at the end of last week, was seeing some records fall, something I know we'll talk about today. But if you're out there, you're listening, you got the Panthers-Texans game on mute, so you can listen to the Baseball Buffet. Make sure you give us a shout at 929-477-2759, as always, 929-477-2759. Nate, oh boy, what a week of baseball. But I'm going to let you take it away with the last night of baseball. Or current
Ooh,
day.
We want to start with last. Yeah, we want to start with, do we want to talk Wednesday night or Thursday night scores? What do you want to do? I'd say we do Thursday
Let's,
night scores. Let's go.
I say we do Thursday nights. But you know what, Nate? Your call. Go for it.
Let's go Thursday. So game's already in the books. The White Sox and the Indians, well, the team formerly known, soon to be formerly
still
known
technically
as the Indians.
Still
technically the Indians, the team that will be known as the Cleveland Guardians. They split a doubleheader earlier today. The White Sox took the first game 7-2. The Cleveland Guardians / Indians took the second game 5-3.
Wait. Nate, the Cleveland baseball team.
The Cleveland baseball team. By winning the first game, 7-2, the White Sox clinched the AL Central, putting that one to bed for good. It was written in the stars. We all knew that was going to happen for a couple of weeks now, but now it's mathematically official. Other finals around the league, the Cardinals extend their winning streak to 12, knocking off the Brewers, the team they are chasing in the NL Central, 8-5. Brewers 91-62, Cardinals 83-69. The Brewers should have the NL Central wrapped up, but it's still mathematically possible for the Cardinals to get in there. More importantly, the Cardinals are making their lead in that second wild card spot a little more comfortable of the teams that are chasing them. I believe that is up to 6, but we'll verify that in a second. Two games of interest out west. We've got the Dodgers went to extra innings against the Rockies, and at the same time, the Giants went to extra innings against the Padres. Coming into the game, Giants were 2 games up on the Dodgers. Unfortunately, the Giants dropped their game to the Padres 7-6 in 10 innings. The Dodgers, since they are playing the Rockies, managed to win 7-5 in extra innings. So the NL West lead is down to a game. Whoever does not win the NL West, they will be very comfortably secured in that top wild card spot. Both teams will already clinch. But if I'm the Giants, I want to win the West because I don't want to face the Cardinals in a one-game do-or-die situation. Other finals, the Mariners have refused to lay down and let the AL East run the wild card picture. They have won four straight now. They downed the A's 6-5. So just when the Oakland A's looked like they were getting back into the wild card picture, they've now lost, I believe, four straight, and the Mariners have usurped them. They're now only 2.5 out of the wild card, keeping it alive. Let's get the Mariners back in the playoffs. It's just better when the Northwest is involved in the postseason. And out in the NL wild card / divisional races, the Diamondbacks ended up beating the Braves 6-4. So the NL East remains open for the Phillies, and I guess technically the Mets are still alive in that division, but we all know that's not going to happen. The Diamondbacks currently have a half-game lead on the Orioles for the pick. The Orioles right now, if the season ended literally right now, the Orioles would have the number one overall pick. However, the Orioles are currently beating Texas 2-0, so they'll remain in that dead heat. The Pirates are leading the Phillies 6-5 in the bottom of the fifth. The Nationals are up 3-0 on the Reds in the seventh. The Blue Jays and the Twins, another AL wild card playoff race game. They are tied 2-2. And then that leaves just the Astros and the Angels, who are scheduled to start in about 30 minutes. The Angels pretty much drawing dead. They're just going to try and play this out and put the thing to rest. The Astros playing for playoff positioning, trying to get, like you alluded to, get everything in line, get everything straight, and just kind of work their way into the playoffs and maybe have to hold off a charge from the Mariners if they can make that any more interesting. So those are your scores. I can run down the standings real quick. As we mentioned, the Brewers have a 7.5 game lead in the division. Not quite done in the Central yet there. The Phillies are 2.5 back of the Braves. The Mets are 7.5 back, still technically alive, but again, probably not going to happen. The Giants and the Dodgers separated by a game. Everybody else in the NL West is done. In the American League, in the East, Tampa Bay, 6 games up on the Red Sox, 8 games up on the Yankees, 8.5 games up on Toronto. They look like they should have the AL East pretty much wrapped up. As we mentioned, the AL Central is done. The White Sox, they are the only team to officially won their division so far because their division somehow was more lopsided even than the AL East. Out West, Houston 7.5 up on Seattle, 9.5 up on Oakland. If Oakland were to lose tomorrow or Houston were to win tonight, Oakland will be out of the divisional race. In the wild card races, go ahead.
I gotta say, Nate, it's been pretty wild as a Yankee fan watching the AL East. Pretty much, it feels like the whole season it's been the Yankees and the Red Sox, almost just forgetting that the Rays and the Blue Jays are there. But boy, it's amazing how far the Rays have how much they've dominated the division, especially with four other really, really high quality teams. I mean, one thing I did want to point out, if you look at the standings, Nate, the fourth place team in the AL East are the Blue Jays, who are 85-67. Now, in the AL Central, the White Sox have 86 wins. So they're a game behind the White Sox in the win column if they were in the AL Central. And again, the White Sox are winning that division, whereas the Blue Jays are in fourth place in the AL East. And in the AL West, they would be solidly in second ahead of the Mariners. So it's really, really unbelievable how good the Blue Jays have been. They currently have, and I know some people really hate this stat, but some people do you think that the 100 plus 171 run differential which is the third best in the AL behind the Astros and the Rays. I mean, that's impressive. It's impressive for a team that, according to ESPN, only has a 52.1% chance of making the playoffs. So I just wanted to give the Blue Jays some love, who are like, I'm doing air quotes here, buried in the standings.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? And this is another reason why we've gained a couple of times throughout the season where if you were commissioner for a day, what are some of the changes you would make? And I would love to see us go to a more balanced schedule. Now, part of that is me as an Orioles fan saying that because, you know,
balanced, though? Like, how do you define balanced?
So right now, you know, how you play everybody in your division about 18 to 19 times, and then you're going to play the rest. So for the AL East, the Yankees are going to play Tampa, Boston, Baltimore, and New York, or Baltimore and Toronto. They're going to play those four teams 19 times each. They're going to play everybody
right.
else in the American League between 4 and 6, and then they play, I think there's like one division that they cross over, and they play maybe 3 games against everybody in that division. So just, you know, I'd rather see them. I'm not saying that you need to play everybody in a 3-game series, but let's at least not play our division 19 times. Do we really need to play that many games against the same people all the time? Can we couple
I
in an extra 2 series or 2 against the West and the Central?
I completely disagree with you on this one. I love it. Absolutely love that the schedule is so stacked against your division. So hold on, let me just do a little quick math. So what is it? You play each team 19 times, right?
Something like it.
So,
between 18 and 19, yeah.
So let's just go with 19, right? So that means in a 5-team division, you know, 19 times 4, that's 76 of your games are against your division. And I think that's obviously, you know, 5 less than half. Of a season, and I think that's exactly how it should be. If anything, you're going to think I'm crazy. I think it should be more. I think it should be you pretty much only play your division and then maybe have some other games against the AL and then maybe have 2 series against the NL per season. I understand, Nate, and I don't think it's a bad argument that you really want to get every team a chance to play everybody else, get a true sense of where everybody stands, and then that's how you determine the best team in the regular season. And I think that does that. I think it absolutely 100% unequivocally tells you who the best teams in the regular season are and who should be on top. But this isn't a fight for the President's Cup, you know, which is the top record in hockey. Who cares about the best record in the regular season? It's stupid. What I think really matters is winning your division and getting into the tournament. It's like being in, you know, my alma mater, the Fairfield Stags, are in the Metro Atlantic Conference, something like that, the MAC, right? But not the MAC you think of, the MAAC, the MAC, exactly. It doesn't matter. You could go 0-50 in the season, or, you know, 0-20, but if somehow you find your way into the tournament, you win that tournament, you get your playoff berth. And in a sense, let's call that the championship for those small conferences like ours. I think the goal when you play and construct your team should be to win your division. If you're the Yankees, you need to worry about the Rays, the Red Sox, the Jays, and the O's. I don't like the building a team for the ultra marathon that is playing all the teams in your division and then also having these extravagant West Coast trips. Maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe you take – I don't know. I'm was going to try to say something like maybe take one West Coast trip a year to play the Astros, the Mariners, the A's, the Angels, the Rangers, and then you'd have to balance it out by having them come east for another set. And so that's too much. I don't like it. I was going to say, so that right there is in using my you say you're playing three games against those four teams, that's 12. Or actually, I guess it would be 15 at home, and then you'd have another 15 in each of their ballparks. That's 30 games of the season. That's unnecessary. That is unnecessary. You're trying to win your division.
See, I think there's a happy medium here. I think we're going overkill on the division. I'd rather see them play 81 games against the American League as a league, all three divisions. That should be half your schedule, and then you should play – at least six games against your corresponding National League division. So let's see that. So for the AL East, that would be, you would get six games against the Braves, the Phillies, the Mets, the Marlins, and the Nationals. So there's.
So, but that's basically
six games each against there. There's.
That's what football does, where you have the AFC East plays one division in the NFC and one division in the AFC every year. So it's a relatively similar formula.
Well, similar, yeah, except but I'm going a little bit further than that because I'm saying you play your regional crossover. So, like, I'm saying, like, basically right now, the way that the schedule is lined up, you're guaranteed to play a home-and-home with everybody in the American League. And then you'll play your one crossover with the NL division. They're already doing that, but I'd like to see them play home and home with the corresponding geographic division. So the AL East is going to play six games home and home every year with the NL East, and then they will also play one series each with the West, say,
okay,
or
so
the Central. Like, basically,
I
I'm
like
adding
this
in more NL games.
I truly dislike the idea of interleague play in any way, shape, or form. I think they should decrease the number of interleague games. I think it's too many. I think you should maybe play two series a season against an NL team. I don't know. Just because for the novelty of it and because you can't cut it off completely or people will lose their minds. But I don't see the point. Why you're playing – if maybe they standardize the designated hitter and got rid of the designated hitter in the NL, we don't need pitchers – we don't need pitchers hitting in the NL games. That's ridiculous.
Well, I agree with you. But that's a whole other conversation and a whole other debate to have.
But for me, that's part of the reason why I want to keep the AL away from the NL.
Yeah.
And that's
like
a big enough reason
everybody.
For me.
I guess that's
see, to me, there's also, Nate, a sidebar to it, and it's not the main point, and it shouldn't be the main. I do think you really make the All-Star game, in a sense, even more important, or not important, intriguing, because then you'll have scenarios where you'll have, you know, Jacob deGrom versus Mike Trout, which you can get in the middle of the season. I get that a counter-argument to this is, well, one of the things that you're given with Nate's plan, we'll call it, is that, you know, you'll start to build a rivalry between, you know, Chris Sale and I don't know, whoever, some hitter on the Marlins or something. I understand that, Nate, but I think you're manufacturing it a little too much. I think you really need to rebuild those true rivalries. I mean, all part of this too is you got to cut down the season. I mean, I think the season is a bit long. You know, going back to 154, something I completely support. But it's not my decision, and I don't see them ever doing that. Let's put it this way. Okay, I love my crazy analogies. It's like, okay, in the AFC, right, say you can have a kicker and a punter, but in the NFC, you have to have one guy who does both. that means whenever the AFC teams play in the NFC, you know, you got to pick either your kicker or your punter to go do, you know, you're basically taking away either your kicker or your punter, and then vice versa, you know, you might not have as good a kicker option when the NFC plays in the AFC stadiums. And the point is it's just a simple little imbalance that's only there for what reason. And because of that, I think it creates an instability and an imbalance in the whole thing. And I think that's, in my opinion, one of the most important things in sports is everybody's playing by the same rules, the same everything, really. And that's how you truly evaluate it. You don't have, you know, 9.5-foot hoops in, you know, AAA, or not AAA, whatever they call it, Division III or whatever it is now, college basketball. You don't have the mounds at different heights at different levels of the sport. I mean, they only recently just got rid of the metal bats in college ball, if I'm not mistaken. With them, at least you're all facing guys who have the same advantage or disadvantage, however you want to put it. But it's just a completely different rule set, and the way you manage is completely different. It's dramatic to say it's two different sports, Nate, but the way it's managed is so different to a point where it's not fair to compare an AL team versus an NL team. That's just my strong opinion.
I don't disagree. I really want to see the DH unified. I really don't care which way they go. I have a preference because I don't think anybody is volunteering to watch pitchers hit. Now, I do have a friend who lives out on the West Coast. He's a big Giants fan. He actually texted me the other day because I believe it was Kevin Gausman was pitching for the Giants, and he had like an RBI sack fly to win the game for the Giants, and he was all like, this is why National League game is better than the American League game, because you have the pitcher stepping up and making this big play. And I didn't respond back to him, but I wanted to respond back with like, yeah, I really dig when I like, sign me up for watching the 150 hitter and playing that he comes through to win the game for me. Now, I say that as an Orioles fan where the entire bottom half of our lineup is hitting 150 collectively right now, I think. So I get to watch it on a daily basis.
Do you remember a couple years ago when Bartolo Colon hit that home run and everybody lost their mind?
I can never forget it, because if you watch more than 30 seconds worth of commercials on the MLB app while streaming a game, they will probably show the highlights of Bartolo Colon's home run.
And everybody acted like it was yard. And everybody though acted like it was one of the, and it was to a point such an iconic moment, and it was. I'll give it that. It deserved its due. It was pretty fantastic. But I think inherently, because it was such a unique thing, you know, a pitcher hitting a home run, a batter in your lineup hitting a home run, it kind of took it. It felt almost overly cheesy, or it felt almost campy. You know what I mean? Like the. I don't know. It shouldn't be that unique of a thing that a hitter on the lineup hits the ball out of the ballpark. Like, I don't know. We get overly excited.
Like Rudy getting his sack for Notre Dame.
Happen. Yeah, exactly. Why are you on the roster, buddy?
He was offside. Anyway, tangent over. Dave, we've gotten almost halfway through the show and we haven't done headlines yet. We should probably get refocused into our headlines.
That's true. Oh my goodness, there's just so much going on. But anyway, yeah, we did see a couple of interesting things happen throughout the week. One of my favorite though was in the outfield. You know, you'll always see a guy, put one hand up to catch the ball. But this time, we saw a bare hand catch by Jesus Sanchez. And for what it's worth, the catch itself, it was deep in the outfield, and it was in play. I mean, that's the thing. It wasn't like a foul ball. I don't believe it was a foul ball. But I just thought it was one of the cooler plays. You don't really see guys going for the bare hand catch. That was pretty fascinating. out of the things we saw this week, and I think to me the most significant thing we saw this week was Salvador Perez breaking Johnny Bench's record for the most home runs by a catcher in the season. And you know, I saw I saw this being an interesting season. I didn't really see many records like that or individual stats falling just because of such an odd thing to come off a 60-game season. But Salvador Perez beating that Johnny Bench record for most home runs by a catcher in the season, I feel like it happened, and then we all sort of moved on. It's really sad. I think that's a huge accomplishment, and it, of course it is an accomplishment. I don't think anybody says it's not, but I don't know if it's getting the attention that it should. So I really wanted to take a moment, give Salvador Perez a shout-out for such a great record. Yeah, that was fantastic. But speaking of records, speaking of achievements, this being more of a – lifetime achievement award, but Adam Wainwright struck out got his 2,000th strikeout, which, you know, the guy's been a machine for a number of years. He's managed to reinvent himself, come back from injury. Adam Wainwright, truly one of those guys that I think we haven't talked about Adam Wainwright this season, and I haven't thought, boy, he's really just building and building and building that case for a Hall of Fame entry, and increasing that percentage with every little move. And then, Nate, I noticed, you know, if you're a regular listener, you know I'll mention periodically that we keep a note of our headlines and things that we want to talk about on the show. Nate, this isn't exactly a headline, my friend. So I'm going to let you talk about how the Blue Jays are turning themselves from a fan favorite to hateful, whiny jerks, because in my head, I still think the Blue Jays are absolutely one of the most fun stories in baseball, but you seem to take issue with them. What is your issue, my friend?
Yeah, so there are a couple of headlines that lead into this, and I'm not sure if you saw them or not. Earlier this week in their series against the Rays, one of the Blue Jays players dropped his scouting card. Now, if you watch any baseball game for any amount of time, you're bound to see, you know, whether it's an outfielder or a pitcher, they're going to pull that card out of their back pocket, and they're going to look, because everybody has all their notes. You know, the catchers usually have it on their wrist, but every player's got that note card of like, oh, you know, in this count, here's where I'm supposed to be positioned, because we've one of the things that I both love and hate about baseball is that we've overstatified the sport. So like, when Mercury is regressing and it's a full moon on a Wednesday at 7:35, the center and the beer vendor is sitting in section 236.
So what you're saying, Nate,
the center.
You hate situational statistics.
No, I like situational statistics, but I do think that we're getting. I think there are times where we go a little far with them. But anyway, everybody has these cards that like tell them where to reposition and, you know, how to pitch every guy depending on every count, and it's fine. Well, one of the Blue Jays players dropped his card on the field, and Kevin Kiermaier for the Rays picked it up and very quickly, slyly hands it to the first base coach. So now the Rays have the Blue – yeah, right. And, well, the Rays got upset about this – or not the Rays. The Blue Jays got upset about this, and in the next game – they threw a beanball at Kevin Kiermaier, and the bench is cleared.
I don't have a problem with them doing either.
Well, Montoya got himself suspended, but here's where I come down on this and why I think the Blue Jays are really just starting to stick in my craw. Now, I do need to preface this with, I'm still super bitter at the Blue Jays for two historical reasons. One, Cito Gaston was the manager for the American League in an All-Star game way back when, and he refused to put Mike Messina, who was the only Orioles representative, into the game to pitch. And I believe the game was actually at Camden Yards that year. So he didn't let Mike Messina pitch in Camden Yards the last time the Orioles hosted the All-Star game. So mad at him about that. And mad at the Blue Jays for that. Also mad at the Blue Jays for the last time the Orioles were in the wild card, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion. There was a little bit of a rivalry that developed there with the Orioles and the Blue Jays. But now, getting to how, you know, you keep saying how the Blue Jays are one of the most fun, most likable teams because they've got all these young guys that are coming up. They're making this playoff push. It's good for them. The Blue Jays are coming back, and it's better for baseball when you have the AL.
Electric is a word I would use.
Yeah. And that's what they are, except that they've managed to, in the last 2-3 weeks to really work me over to the point where I'm like, you know what? No, I still dislike you, and I still dislike the Blue Jays. A couple of weeks ago when the Orioles were playing the Blue Jays, Robbie Ray was on the mound, and I think did we touch on the jawing, the back and forth jawing that he got into it with Brandon Hyde?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because Robbie Ray thought that the Orioles were stealing the signs and tipping his pitches to the hitters. Well, okay, Robbie, first of all, if your signs are that obvious that the Orioles can steal them, maybe it's on you, not on the Orioles. But also, like you, I think we've talked about this before with sign stealing and sticky stuff and all this stuff. Like, yeah, it's against the rules, but it's also one of those things that everybody's doing it. So is there anything wrong to be gained by taking that advantage? And so,
well,
like, now the Blue Jays are getting all hurt and upset that people are taking advantage where they can. And I guess my position is, instead of getting like whiny baby on it and, you know, throwing at guys and starting verbal altercations with the opposing manager, just go out and win your game and be quiet.
I don't think it's being whiny baby, though. I think they're doing exactly what they think they should be doing. If you felt like what they were doing was just shredding the integrity of the game, they would be wrong to not retaliate. I would be upset if that was a team that I rooted for, and they didn't do that. I'd be like, okay, great, sure, yeah, of course, you know, you want to say, oh, the best way to get back at somebody is to beat them on the field. Yeah, well, yeah, we all know that. But sometimes it's more than that. It's just the integrity. That's the beauty of sports, is it's not just all right, we'll go out there and beat you on the field. There's a certain passion to it. When you feel that passion and that special nature of sports is infringed upon by stealing a playbook, you know, there I forget exactly the full scenario, but you know, there have been situations where I think it was like, you know, a Patriots coach got an opposing team's, you know, playbook. And in that case, I think it's just as fair for the, you know, the team to say, oh, I got my hands on their playbook, I'm going to read the hell out of it. And then I think it's equally fair for the team who lost the playbook to be like, hey, yeah, we lost the playbook, but we're still going to kick you in the face for what you did. And I think both things are fair.
Now, I think I'm going to draw a little bit of a distinction here, though. Now, like you said, I forget exactly the situation, how the Patriots got a hold of the opposing team playbook. But in the Blue Jays situation, the Rays got a hold of that scouting card solely because of the boneheaded mistake of the Blue Jays player. Now, if
I don't think
you
that
make
matters.
I think it does. I think if you are the one making the mistake and then the other team takes advantage of your mistake, you aren't then entitled to retaliate against them for being smarter than you are. Now, if it was a situation where, like, the guy was standing on first, like Kevin Kiermaier standing on first base, so first baseman's holding him on, and Kevin Kiermaier reaches into his back pocket and pulls it out, okay, that's different. In that situation, I'm saying go ahead, you know, throw at him, but throw at him, you know, don't throw at his head, you throw at his hip. If your first baseman drops the card of his own volition because he just is that clumsy, and Kevin Kiermaier notices it and picks it up and realizes what it is and passes it off, you're not entitled to retaliate because of your own screw-up. No, like, you need to, you know, fix your mistake and take your own accountability for it. Don't get mad at me for taking advantage of your screw-up.
Why? You can't tell me what to get mad about and what not to get mad about.
I mean, I can't tell you what you're not allowed to get mad about, but at the same time, I think you're unjustified in getting as cranky as you are when you're the one that created the problem.
Created the problem. We're not the ones who stole the, you know, we're not the ones who outright stole something, which you very, you know, if you're trying to be the king of ethical kings, then the right thing to do would have been to say, oops, hey, you dropped this.
Hey, when do we say anybody was trying to be the king of ethical kings here?
That's true. Well, it sounds like both parties, though, are trying to act like the – I mean, it sounds to me like both sides are trying to act like the kings of the moral high ground, which is silly. I mean,
yeah,
right. Let me put it this way, right? If I'm a full believer of you don't cheat to win, but if you can cut every possible corner without breaking the rules, then you're wrong if you don't. I don't want to root for a team that tries to go out there and plays a clean cut. Oh, we play by the rules. This is the rule book. We do everything the right way. Ah, we're buttoned up. Ah. No, I don't care. Do what you got to do to win. I'm a fan, right? If I was a member of the organization, then I might feel differently because it would reflect on me. But I'm just a fan. I root for the laundry. I root for the name across the front. And you know what? When everybody else is eliminated in the postseason complaining that your team has been cheating or you know, using deceptive methodology or something like that to win, so what? You're at least sitting there on the couch complaining about it. Well, at least I get to root for my team. And you know, I have that overarching philosophy about sports, and it's really, really frustrating being a Jets fan, having had the Patriots had scandal after scandal after scandal, and every single one of those scandals is the air quote. It's people just making, you know, mountains out of molehills. And I think the same thing is true, you know, in baseball a lot of times. I think players get too sensitive about things like unwritten rules. And I think I think, Nate, I'm curious, do you think I think it was Dallas Braden, if I recall, got really upset a couple of years ago when Alex Rodriguez walked across the mound, and Braden said something like, that's my mound, you don't walk across it. And the two of them got really into it. Now, yep. First off, whose side were you on that? Did you think A-Rod shouldn't have walked across it and Braden had a point, or do you think Braden was being too sensitive and you know, you shouldn't get so worked up about Alex Rodriguez walking across the field?
I think both of them were idiots. I didn't really side with either of them on that one. I do think Braden was entirely too sensitive about it. I also think that Alex Rodriguez is just like a world-class grade A number one tool bag, because he knows that pitchers are going to be sensitive about that, and that they're going to get upset about it. And he's also just the guy that just doesn't care, so he's going to do it anyway.
Oh, and I loved it. I mean, I thought the thing where he slapped the ball out of the first baseman's hand, or tried to, that was one of the greatest moments ever. I loved it. Maybe it was the third baseman. I don't remember exactly, but he was rounding the bases or something. Anyway, my point, though, is similar to that, is this, right? So I don't know. I think if you're the player who drops the statistics card or whatever that tells you, you know, when to shift or you know, it's basically a play caller card like a quarterback has. If you,
right,
Nate, are playing for the Orioles and you drop it, what do you expect the opponent to do? And same scenario, what do you want them to do?
I expect them to keep it. I expect them to pick it up and use it to their advantage. I would full, like, if I'm the one, if I dropped it, I would totally expect them to use it against us.
And what would
what
you do if you found theirs?
I would use it.
It seems universally accepted that you would get it and use it, and it's not cheating. It's taking advantage of something that literally fell into your lap, right? I think we both agree with that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that's fair.
But I think that's the problem, and why you and I are going to get hung up here is because we both feel that way. But you and I both know damn well that there are people out there who just are hardcore, foot in the sand. No, if you drop it, you give it back to the other team. That's you. If you win that way, then you're not winning properly. It seems like something a guy like, you know, a Herman Edwards would subscribe to. Despite Arizona State, I think, actually being under investigation, so maybe not the greatest example, but you get my point.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a bunch of schools, you know, that's part of coach speak that you have to say that. I mean, one of the things with, I'm going to hark back to Penn State here, and this is really kind of going to get kind of awkward to bring this up, but like when Paterno was there, one of the mottos of the Penn State program was success with honor, the idea being we're going to win. We're going to do things the right way. Like, our kids are all going to go to class. We're not going to just recruit athletes that come here. Like, if you come to school at Penn State, you're expected to go to class. You're expected to graduate because, you know, there's life after football. That was the idea. He called it his grand experiment. The, you know, I said the catchphrase was success with honor. Now 2011 rolls around. There's a whole bunch of tarnishing of that image and a whole bunch of tarnishing of that reputation. But the program in the school has kept going on with this idea of success with honor. And, you know, it's a great soundbite. I like the idea of it. Now, in actual competition, if there's an advantage to be gained, I personally, like you said, I'm a fan. I want to see my team take the advantage and run with it. Now, if you can do it within the rules, by all means, you have to do it within the rules. I don't want anybody going outside the rules. Now, with this, you know, the scouting card that we're talking about, there's nothing against the rules about if you find this information, you can't use it. Would the ethical thing for Kiermaier to have done, would it have been to pick it up and turn it back over to the guy? Yeah, that's the nice guy ethical thing to do. We're all taught that if you see somebody drop, you know, a $20 bill in the street or drop their wallet in the street, you're not supposed to pick it up, rifle through it, and keep whatever you want out of it. You're supposed to turn it back over to the person because that's, you know, how you live in a nice civil society.
Quote, unquote, the right thing to do.
Right, but we also know that we're humans, and humans by nature are awful, especially to each other. So, like, if you factor in the human nature part of it, like, yeah, the expectation should be if you drop your scouting card and somebody else on the other team finds it, you should expect that they're going to use it against you. Don't get upset when that expectation comes to fruition, because you know if the shoe was on the other foot, yeah, you like to think that you would turn it back into them, but you know you wouldn't. You know you'd at least take a glance at it before you turned it back over to them. So, like, don't pretend that you're a more moral person.
I like where you're going with it. I do think it's hard for both of us to kind of think a lot of the same. I think it's unfair for us to assume everybody would feel that way. I think there are absolutely some people out there who not just pride themselves in being so over the top ethical, but they make it a core value of who they are. And I can confidently say I have such terrible morals, Nate, that I can't even relate to it. That's why I'm fun, damn it.
I think that I'm a fairly ethical person, and I strive to be the better person, but I also know that I have my own faults, and I'm not going to attain that high lofty
standard. No, you have some faults, that's for sure.
Yeah, I sure do.
So, speaking of faults, let's talk about some people out there who don't have a lot of faults. And I want to get your thoughts as we come down to the end of the season on some individual honors, and I want to get your thoughts on a couple of things. We got your thoughts last week on Rookie of the Year. I don't think that's probably changed, but I'm really curious what you're thinking right now in terms of Cy Young, MVP, and if you have any thoughts on Golden Glove. I feel like Golden Glove as a fan or more of a casual fan, you know, you don't see as much defensively as anybody else. But let's start with some of the big awards. Is there anybody that you jump out or that jumps out at you as the, you know, the best hitter in the league or the MVP? I feel like in the AL it's been Ohtani or Vlad. And I got to say, I mean, if you look at the stats, you know, Correa has been a very good defensive player, not quite as good offensively as some of the others, but I mean, you know, Correa has been a guy I think that I think has been consistent enough throughout the season. So you take it away, Nate. I want to hear your thoughts on what you're thinking MVP wise. Start there.
So in the American League, I do think that, you know, the leader has to be Ohtani because of what he's done on the mound, which is just, he was carrying the Angels as their number one pitcher all year. But City's getting shut down from pitching for the rest of the year, I don't know that his bat, as impressive as his bat is, and for all the power numbers that he put up, and I believe he is now officially second behind Vlad Jr. in
And home Perez. Runs. They both have 46, and then it's Ohtani with 45.
Okay, yeah. So in that perspective, I really do think that Vlad Jr. has a very strong case to snatch the AL MVP from him, especially if the Blue Jays end up in the playoffs, because, yeah, everything Ohtani has done has been great on the season. And being this stellar two-way player, I think that definitely warrants the MVP award. But I'm not going to be shocked when you have these old-school baseball writers who decide to go back and be like, yeah, but, you know, you're only like a 270-ish, 280, like a 260, 270 hitter. The power numbers are good, but I'm splitting off your pitching statistics from your offensive statistics for this, for the purposes of this voting, and I'm going to Vlad Jr., who's crushing it in average, crushing it with on-base plus slugging, leads the league in, I believe he's the league leader in RBIs, but I am not currently looking at the stat sheet, and he's tied with Sal Perez for home runs. I also think that I also think Sal Perez has a very strong argument, you know, being tied for the league lead in home runs, breaking Johnny Bench's record, as you alluded to, and that's all stuff that these writers are gonna grab onto. So I could see – I think Perez is going to get votes, but I think he's going to get, like, second and third place votes. Maybe he gets the first place vote from Kansas City. Maybe he gets one from the writer in St. Louis and steals a couple of points, but I don't think that he's going to get, like, legitimate MVP consideration.
So you think it's a solid two-horse race between Ohtani and Guerrero, with Perez very solidly cementing himself in third in that race, right? I don't think that's unfair to say.
But I think it becomes a one-horse race if the Blue Jays fall apart and don't make the playoffs.
I don't see that happening. I guess that's part of why...
Right.
That's part of why I may be overvaluing Vlad at this point. I mean, let me...
But that's what teams do.
Well, if you look at Vlad's closing of the season, right? Right now they're playing Minnesota. They have a four-game set against Minnesota, series against Minnesota, series against the Yankees, and a series against Baltimore. And looking at it, he isn't facing one pitcher that scares me. Not one. You know, they've got, what, Pineda, Corey Kluber, Garrett Cole. I guess it was one game against Kluber and one against Cole, and I don't know if Kluber is just me wanting to believe that he's still good. But that's, I mean, it, you know, I think Vlad has a good path, and I do agree with you that, you know, Vlad's opportunity at the MVP might be contingent on if they get in the playoffs or not, but I think they've got, they kind of lucked out with the way this goes. And sorry to say it, Nate, them closing against the Orioles gives him that opportunity to leave that lasting impression, as opposed to a guy like Ohtani, where it really doesn't matter what they do, right? It doesn't matter. They're 72-80 right now. If they win out, you know, they'll be 82-80, which would be really cute that they did it. And I don't know, Nate. I'm trying to debate right now. How much do I take into account the fact that there was no Mike Trout? Now, Los Angeles finishes the season. They've got a game against Houston, and then it's six against Seattle and three against Texas. And it looks like the Los Angeles Ohtanis aren't really facing any pitchers that scare me as well. And for what it's worth, I have to look at this. I'm showing, this is according to ESPN, they actually have Ohtani as the starting pitcher listed for Sunday, September 26th. So that's curious.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah. I
could have sworn Joe Maddon said that he was done.
I saw the same thing. So, you know what? I just went to MLB.com, and this yesterday it says Ohtani to pitch on Sunday against Seattle. So he will get at least one more start on the mound. And I, you know what, man, if he performs really well in that last start and can hit a couple of home runs and finish, you know, first or second in the home run race, man, you know what, it's a lot closer of a race than I really thought it was when I brought up this topic.
But if he goes out and
which
lays
is good.
An egg in his last start, if he goes out and lays an egg in his last start, it's going to pretty much cement it for Vlad Jr., I think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. It seems like both these guys could lose it. Seems like both these guys, though, certainly have an opportunity to win it. What do you think on the NL side?
So the NL side, you just have so many guys. Like, no, this is another one where just nobody wants to run away with it. So you got Max Muncy, who had the go-ahead two-run home run today for the Dodgers. Trey Turner on the Dodgers is just absolutely tearing it up. Bryce Harper is having his best season since he won the MVP in 2015 with the Nationals, but he's doing it for a Philly squad that is trying to run down their division. You also have Freddie Freeman, who is trying to haul the Braves over the line. I think that Paul Goldschmidt deserves some looks because the Cardinals were on their 12-game winning streak, but signed Goldschmidt and Wainwright working that team from basically 500 around the trade deadline, just lost and forgotten about. So now they look to me to be very comfortably in the playoffs. They haven't clinched it yet, but I think they're there. So, you know, between all those guys, and then let's not forget about Fernando Tatis, except here's my problem.
He's
with
been
that.
So
I
hurt.
Think Tatis, right, he keeps getting hurt and then coming back. And when he plays, he plays well. But here's the problem. The Padres have just fallen off the cliff. Suddenly they can't pitch. They can't really hit. Tatis and Manny Machado got in that big dust-up. I thought that there was an outside chance that if the Padres made the playoffs on Manny Machado's back, that Machado could have gotten MVP votes. But since it looks more and more like the Padres aren't even going to get there now, I think the NL MVP is wide open and really is going to depend on who makes playoffs. Because if the Phillies don't make the playoffs, I don't see them handing the award to Bryce Harper, even though he's having a great season, because there's nothing superlative about his season. Yes, it's his best,
right,
his best statistical season, but it's nothing like, you know, Vlad. You've got Vlad leading in almost every Triple Crown category except for I don't believe he leads in average. I think that might
no,
be one.
Right now,
that might be
you're
the one
back,
category.
It's, Juan Soto, but he's third in average. Soto's at 321, Turner's at 318, and Harper's at 314. So he's, you know, it's not out of reach for him. But I mean, if you're looking at hits, you got Trey Turner at the top of that, total bases. I mean, you've got Freeman. Home runs, Tatis is in charge of firmly ahead in that one. So I don't know. I agree with you. I don't think anybody's running away with it, but it seems like I would say, like, if I had to pick a guy, one metric that I really like is total bases. I think that's an overlooked metric, but and that's where Freddie Freeman is. Right at the top. Actually, interesting. Your top three guys for total bases: Freeman, Riley, and Albies. Very interesting. So they're really making things happen there. Then rounding out after those three, it's Arenado, Harper, and Goldschmidt.
There's Goldschmidt.
I wanted to get that far because you brought him up, but. I'd love to see Paul Goldschmidt have a whole season where he's just the guy. And I think it's going to happen. He seems like one of those guys going to have one random year where he finally does it, but he just hasn't quite done it.
Weird tangent. Does Joey Votto hang it up this year, or does Joey Votto come back next year?
I think he comes back.
If he comes back, do you think the Reds can keep building on what they've been doing? Can the Reds get in to the playoffs?
No, you know what happens? You know it's a perfect move for everybody? Is Votto goes back, and if the Reds seem like they really can make a run for it, they go for it, right? You look at that division, and you think about next season. I mean, okay, I think the Cardinals will be good. The Cubs and the Pirates, no. But Cubs just clearly admitted, hey, you know, you're going to go, you know, 14 wins against us next year. Pirates, you're going to get 14 wins against us. Brewers, they're going to be a tough game. And the Cardinals, I think you and I agree, Cardinals just always seem to know what they're doing. And so there are the Reds right smack dab in the middle. So the Reds have the luxury of saying, okay, if we overachieve with Votto, then maybe we find a way to add another piece and make a run for it. But if the Reds just don't seem like it's all together, you trade Votto to a team with a good farm, send him to Atlanta or even Seattle or Houston, one of those teams that right now is in the thing. It seemed like a move that a Blue Jays might make next year. And you send him at right around the trade deadline, get some youth back for the Reds. You send him to a new place where he can have a true playoff run. I actually think that's a really good plan if you're the Reds.
And if you're Votto, you
present it to Votto. I know it would upset you, but it's the way it goes. I mean, you present it to Votto like, hey, listen, you come back, you play well, we'll take care of you. If you come back and things aren't working out and you want to stay here, stay here. But if you want to go to a team that can, you know, and you want to be in the thick of a playoff race, please do, because we know we'll get something back for you. I don't know if they would stay quite like that, but you get my point.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to frame it that way, where you leave it in Votto's decision and basically tell him, like, hey, we're not making the playoffs, can we trade you for the better of the franchise, or do you want to retire a Red, and then make it his decision, that I'm more okay with. If he wants to chase the ring, let him chase the ring, but I really want to see him get in the playoffs with the Reds. Just the fact that he's only played
for
one franchise – I very well might be, which, you know, speaking of guys that are, you know, really spearheading a, we are out of time. I just realized that.
Oh yeah.
I was going to say Buster Posey is another dark horse for the NL MVP carrying the Giants right now.
Mm.
He's having a good season. Not having a great season. He's just very quietly being Buster Posey.
Yeah. Now, you did bring up a very good point, Nate, and that point is that we're almost out of time. So I'm going to let you give a last couple of thoughts. I'll give a last couple of thoughts, and I'll tell everybody good night.
All right. Well, my parting shot is going to be, if there are any baseball writers listening to this, vote for Buster Posey for the NL MVP. Let's get as many awards on those Giants. Hey, if I get a root for – being an Orioles fan, I'm going to root for the team that wears the closest colored laundry to the Orioles. I'm rooting orange and black. Let's go, baby. Get the Giants across the line.
You're so weird. All right, Nate. I love it, though. I love it. I respect the hell out of it. All right, guys. Listen, it's been another great show. We'll catch you all next week, which will be our last show of the regular season. Unbelievable. Check us out on the web, www.sportcitychefs.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Sport City Chefs. We've got a lot of football content coming up. I've got a little snippet and a review of the Jets coming up, if in case you want to feel depressed just like I do. But, hey, I have said enough for a lifetime. And for the last time, I wish you all a pleasant good afternoon.
Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman versus MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef, Sports City.
Woo! Connecticut.